Welcome to Manager Tools, a professional sense of humor, part one. Here we go. This cast answers these questions. What kind of jokes can I tell? What standards should I set with my team about humor and jokes? Why do my directs laugh at my jokes? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. I'm glad we're finally going to talk about this, particularly the thing we're going to talk about at the end about why do people laugh at my jokes? Because it's just funny because I was, before I was a manager, I wasn't very funny. Then I became a manager and all of a sudden people started laughing at my jokes. Great.
Well, let me ask you something though. Your directs laugh at your jokes, but do I laugh at your jokes?
No. You're not laughing now and I'm joking. So
apparently it's not a function of the funniness. Either I'm really stupid or maybe it has to do with role power. I'm just saying.
Well, we'll have to come back to that because there's, I think there's an interesting, I'm sure you have some thoughts there. Well, cool. Okay. So we're going to talk about humor in the workplace. And tell me there are some rules, right? I mean, I know not everybody adheres to those rules, but there are rules of some sort.
Yeah, there are rules of comportment for professionals and specifically for managers. And the manager's standard is slightly higher, but probably the most guidance you'll get on jokes these days is, you know, don't be politically incorrect, but political incorrectness is not the issue at all. We don't worry about political correctness as professionals. We worry about being professionals. And then what ends up happening is we don't have to worry about political correctness. 7 points here, getting into the weeds.
7 points. Now that's not funny at all.
Yeah.
I got you to laugh.
Okay, exactly. Good. Your directs don't laugh at your jokes because they're funny, guys. They don't. Never joke about your own power. Never joke about your organization or anything related to your company. Never joke in poor taste, obviously, even amongst your friends. You're not allowed to have a personal style of humor, okay, unless it's just bad jokes. Look, I don't want to be all negative. So the best theme for a personal sense of humor, a style, is self-deprecation. Always works, every time, appreciated by all directs. And then lastly, as a manager, we have to give feedback when somebody violates these guidelines regarding professional standards of comportment as it relates to humor.
All right, so let's get to the first point where you are going to completely burst my bubble. That my directs are laughing at my jokes because they are so funny.
Yeah. What's funny about this is that I probably thought the same thing you did until I realized this was true. And having said it 1,000 times at conferences over the years, you know, you say it enough, you begin to learn it. Yeah, lots of managers, me and you and others, make the mistake of thinking that we're actually funnier than we are. We make jokes in meetings, and generally those jokes get a laugh. Sometimes our directs make jokes, and they don't get a laugh, so we think, well, we're more funny than them. Even when previously, and I think it's fair to say, neither you or I are particularly humorous people naturally. We don't have any fabulous comic timing. I don't think our friends would have said, oh, yeah, he's a funny guy. They never would have said that. So previously we weren't, but suddenly now we're managers, or we were years ago, and suddenly, therefore, we're funny. Even folks who have offbeat senses of humor and only got weird sort of sardonic, ironic laughs from people years ago suddenly start getting more laughs, or they find their humor more understood, as it were, once they're a manager. And of course, point of this is directs don't laugh at your jokes, folks, because the jokes are funny. They laugh at your jokes because they're yours. They laugh at your jokes because you're the manager. Because it's the appropriate thing to do. Not everyone will always speak truth to power. And the fact is, you're probably not nearly as funny as the feedback you get. And look, guys, we get it. The desire to have your jokes laughed at in terms of your life absolutely predates, and in, for some of us, probably outranks our desire to be a good manager. That sense of wanting to be liked, even when you have power, is a powerful part of human biology. It's wired into all of us to some degree. High I's and S's more so than D's and C's, but that's a separate discussion.
Yeah. Your directs are motivated to mislead you into thinking you are funnier than you are. I mean, that's essentially what they're doing.
I might say it differently. I don't think they're trying to mislead you. I think they're just laughing because you're the boss. And they're just going along. I mean, I think if all we did was ask people to answer truthfully to everything, as opposed to recognize political sensitivities, you know, then there wouldn't be... Mike, weren't we taught at the academy during the honor code that we could tell white lies?
Yeah.
For instance, this will blow people's bubbles. If you are a guest at someone's house and you are served a meal and the hostess asks, how were the potatoes? And they were horrible, almost inedible. And so you didn't eat them all, but you ate some as a matter of courtesy. You don't say, ma'am, they were horrible, which is the true answer.
Right, that would be the truth, right?
Yeah. What you can say is, everything was so good, or I've never been so full in my life, or they were wonderful, which is an appropriate white lie. And so I think directs aren't trying to tell us that we're funny. They're just telling a little white lie, and they're responding to our power and not to our sense of humor. And the fact is, the whole point of one-on-ones is to reduce the amount of our relationship with our directs that is based on our role power and to build it more based on trust. So you're not as funny as you think you are, probably. Your ability to get laughs is based more on your role power.
Well, here's the problem, dude. Managers often believe they are funny, and so they want to get more positive feedback from their directs, and so they try to be funny more often and tell more jokes, and the directs are laughing, so they think it's working, and it's just terrible.
Yeah. And then if they were speaking truth to power, they'd actually say, we're not laughing with you. We're laughing at you. And what's more, we're laughing at you when you're not around with some of your peers or somebody else or what have you. Yeah, so guys, don't let your direct feedback to your attempts at funniness cause you to try to be more often to be funny. And I got to tell you something. If you think you're naturally a funny person, if you've ever thought, oh, you know, I should probably, you know, I'm pretty good at funny. I joke. Humor is a thing that everybody appreciates. I'm going to tell jokes. It's part of who I am. Maybe, you know, gosh, I could even see myself in my next career doing a little stand-up or whatever. I am reminded of two things about that. First is one of my favorite stories about being a pro golfer. Not that I was ever a pro golfer, but Gary McCord during, I want to say the Masters, but of course he was banned from that telecast years ago, was very impressed by some professional's 30-yard chip shot to within an inch. And he said, folks, if you ever want to know, if you ever think you're good enough to turn pro and you're wondering whether or not you are, here's what you do. Go out in your front yard, drop 50 golf balls anywhere in your yard, park your car in your driveway and chip all 50 balls onto the hood of your car and have them stop on the hood of your car. If you can do that, you're a pro golfer. Same thing with humor. Every once in a while, you hear bits and pieces of stories. And over the years, I've probably heard it 100 times. Will Ferrell, Chris Rock, guys with fantastic, Dave Chappelle, fantastic comedic timing. Jimmy Kimmel, who's the kid that's lighting it up on The Tonight Show now. These guys go out to bars, go Jimmy out Fallon, to comedy. Right? Jimmy Fallon, yeah. These guys are fabulously funny people. And they hone it. And they have 20 jokes. And they discover that 10 of them don't work at all. They're horrible. They don't work. And they get rid of those 10. Of the other 10 that do work, only two make it into their hour-long HBO special, which we get to see all of their top 10% jokes.
That's right. And they practice those two 1,000 times to perfect the timing, right? I mean, yeah. It's real work. Unlike writing a book. I mean, writing a book is easy. There's not a lot of, but jokes, being a comedian, there's work there, dude.
You've now made a joke about books. That is funny. Guys, you don't know this, but right before we started recording, I was a little late finishing the podcast and we're recording it. And I was late. And he says, hey, no, I mean, this can't be any work in this thing. And I said, oh yeah, it's just like a Ouija board. You just put your fingers on it and it magically types itself. I don't have to feel like I'm gouging my soul out with a bent tine fork trying to write these things so that we can be efficient, which of course right now we're not being efficient.
Yeah. But it's funny.
Yeah. I suppose I should have foreseen that this cast would have more jokes than a normal cast. Humor, guys, is a pretty delicate tool when you have power. Everything is seen through the lens of your power. So don't let your newfound skills at telling jokes cause you to be the butt of a joke. Be careful. Again, they're not laughing at your jokes because they're funny.
Yeah, I think the problem too is when, well, first of all, not to be a dead horse, but folks, I am you. I've been there. I know I'm not funny. I know it, right? But we often fool ourselves into believing that, hey, things are going great. So what happens though, and here's the problem, is people start to tell jokes. They start to believe that they're actually funny and the director's not laughing at them. They're laughing at their jokes. And then in that moment of trying to be funny, they go too far. And then they make jokes about things they shouldn't be joking about. Now are you not only the butt of the joke, now you're doing damage to your credibility and to the organization. So let's talk about those. And one of those is never joke about your power. That's a bad, bad thing.
Yeah, it really is. It's the ultimate bad idea. And it's easy to do it. It essentially defines part of your relationship between you and your directs. By the way, Mike, I just got to tell you a funny story here before we go any further regarding humor. Mike, you mentioned that you're not funny. I'm also not funny. Although years of presenting has helped me get better at timing. And of course, every time you tell what is supposed to be humorous or you classify it loosely as a joke, you discover which ones work and which ones don't work, and timing and so on comes through repetition. But here's how bad it was years and years and years ago when I first started having to give presentations. My boss at the time told me, you're just not funny. You just don't, you know, you don't have the timing. And I said, okay. And he said, we need to give you a joke that is both self-deprecating and that you can't miss. And I happened to have the joke. It just sheer luck timing. And I said, well, I actually have a one-liner that's good. He says, one-liners are good. You know, you're not going to mess it up. And I said, okay, so here's the joke. A skeleton goes into a bar and orders a beer and a mop. Right, well, that's funny. He drinks the beer. Of course, the beer goes all over the floor because he's just a skeleton, right? And my boss goes, yeah, that's good. It's funny. It's a one-liner. It's ba-dum-bump, right? And he said, so make sure you tell that in the next staff meeting. So I got up in front of the staff meeting and said, and he said, Mark's got a joke to tell, you know, just sort of working on his comic timing. And I said, a skeleton goes into a bar and orders a broom and a mop. And everybody's looking at me like, what? I mean,
you should never tell another joke in your life. You should never again. Never.
Yeah. So look, you mentioned power. Here are some classic examples of, and by the way, there's a theme here that I'm going to share with you in advance, which is, oh, go find the websites that say, use humor to diffuse your power, to make yourself more like everyone else. And then, of course, people put together humor and power, and they say things like, here I am planning for the next layoff. Ha, 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 ha. Right? Yeah,
good.
No. I say, no, of course, that mistake you just made would never enter my mind at review time. Or, laugh it up, guys. Pretty funny. But don't forget who controls compensation around here. Right? These are all jokes that rely on the difference of power between the manager and the direct. And they also essentially imply consequences, which are a function of power.
Yeah. They don't look at it as you being funny. They look at you as subtly threatening them. That's how they interpret it, right?
Yeah. You build good relationships with your people, especially if you do one-on-ones. So you think a little bit of dark humor is okay. Folks, it's not. It never is. It's unprofessional. It's unseemly. It's derogatory. It's arrogant. More importantly, it's self-referential in a bad way without being deprecating, so it's selfish. And then there's the other side of this argument. You know, this argument about being unprofessional and unseemly, I'll call that the comportment argument. One must comport oneself with professionalism. But there's also the reciprocity argument. Suppose one of your directs said, in response to an assignment you gave her, well, I guess I'll do this. And you failed to realize it's a joke. And you say seriously to the person, dude, there's not a lot of wiggle room here. We got to get this done. And your rec comes back with, geez, boss, get over yourself. I was totally joking. Of course, I know you can assign me this stuff.
Seems like a normal momentary misunderstanding.
Yeah, it does. But it's not. Okay. The direct has made a joke about their relative lack of power. You didn't get it. And there's a small nick taken out of your relationship. That's exactly what happens when we managers make jokes about our power. We joke about our power relatively more than the direct. they don't get it, potentially. They get a little fearful, and we have to say, dudes, it was a joke. And again, a little nick out of the relationship. And imagine you having to say it was a joke because it wasn't funny to them. Now, you think it's funny, but funny is always in the mind of the recipient. Communication is what the listener does. If you go around telling jokes that nobody laughs at, let me give you a clue. They're not jokes.
That's right.
The communication is what the listener does. The recipient, the audience, is what makes a joke funny, not the teller. Because if they don't think it's funny, it's not funny. So you think it's funny. They respond without thinking it's funny, but respond fearfully. You have just made a threatening statement, to your point, Mike.
Right. Well, here's the problem with reciprocity. There is none here, in fact, because in your example, your director made a joke, and you can push back on the joke because you're the boss. You make a joke, they don't get it, or they think it's inappropriate. They don't get to push back. They just take it, and it harms the relationship, all right? There is no reciprocity relative to that. Role power ruins it all.
Yeah.
If we could just get rid of role power, maybe we just get rid of that.
Yeah. Look, guys, if the purpose of something was to be funny, and it ends up not being funny, it's better to have said nothing at all.
Exactly.
That's really what it boils down to.
Okay. So don't joke about your power, folks. The other thing you don't joke about is your organization.
Yeah, look, and that just follows inevitably from not being able to joke about ourselves or our power, because the power that we have is from the organization. If we can't joke about our power, we can't joke about our organization, because our power comes from there. Our power is the organization's power. Now, look, I have been in the last 6 months out on the road with clients, talking to them and educating people about the three types of power. And I know we've talked about it before in podcasts, but I want to do it again because it's useful. There are three types of power. And folks, this is not Horseman and Ozan. This is not Manager Tools. This is not Career Tools. This is Psychology 101. Okay. This is Organizational Theory 101. Go look it up on the web. There are three types of power. Now, there are some websites that'll say there are four types of power, but when you look at it, they've just got one of these three broken down into two areas. First of all, there's your role power. It's the power you have that the organization gives you to compel or to essentially visit consequences. You can't actually compel people to do things, but you can visit consequences on people in the form of the contract between the company and the employee. That said, it's not nearly as strong as most newly promoted first-time managers think, because you can't hire somebody without HR's approval. You can't fire somebody without HR's approval. You don't get to promote people all by yourself. The organization has to okay that, and so on. Role power is probably, depending upon who you want to talk to, 5 to 10% of your portfolio of power. The second type of power is expertise power. And expertise power, defined loosely, is the power that results from the ability to influence other people's behavior because they come to you for advice because of your known expertise, and they follow that advice. It's not enough for you to think you're an expert. Other people have to acknowledge it, come to you, ask you questions, and then follow your advice. Typically, expertise power, again, is 5 to 10% of the total. Usually requires a significant amount of time and energy in order to gain it, either through an advanced degree, a technical master's degree, a PhD, extensive organizational experience, or stellar performance over a long period of time. Expertise takes a long time to get. Role power is completely outside of your ability to change. You can't change your role power on your own. You can't even get demoted without approval. You have to ask to be demoted, which leaves us only one thing: relationship power. Relationship power is trust. Trust speeds up human interaction, and organizations exist to provide human interaction. Here's what most people don't know about role power. And every time I tell this story, I give this discursion, people are surprised by it. I said, let's take an example. Mike is the CEO of my company. It's a 1,000-person company, and Mike's finally decided that the company needs to put in place online electronic expense accounting. We've been using paper expense accounting, and the CFO has come to Mike and said, you know, gosh, we need to do this, save us a couple million bucks a year, let's do that. And Mike says, yeah, great. So Mike agrees to the plan and rolls it out to his directs, and they roll it out to their directs, and they roll it out to their directs. All of this coming from the very top, new corporate-wide policy on expense accounting. And then finally comes to me, and I'm obligated to read the policy, understand the policy, and then not just forward the policy to my directs, but explain it to them and explain how in my team we're going to implement this policy. Probably be different if we never travel versus if we travel a lot. But regardless, I'm obligated to educate and to essentially describe that policy to the company. That is, in fact, me speaking for the organization. That is what role power is, in a nutshell, the ability, the authority to speak for the organization. No one on my team probably would assume they could get away with saying, yeah, I don't want to follow that expense accounting policy. You would say, well, then you're not going to get paid for your expenses, dude. Nobody would do it. And I would look at a person who challenged me and said, it's a company policy, dude. It applies to everybody. You can't, I mean, you're fighting the wrong battles. Whatever. Okay. So that's me using my role power, speaking for the company. Okay. Same thing would be true if the company finally put in place, say, badging for securities, everybody wearing a badge, the controlled access to various places. You get hired, you get a badge, you get fired or retire or resign, you lose your badge. You can't keep your badge, and everybody has a badge. And by the way, you probably track where you are, or they certainly track ingress and egress to various points of that are controlled. Imagine one of your directs came to you one day and said, yeah, I'm not a badge person. I don't believe my personal aura is enhanced by wearing a badge. So I'm not going to wear a badge, but I'm sure you can arrange something so that I can come and go wherever I want. And you sit here and say, personal aura? I'm sorry, what could you possibly? Anyway, and so you say, well, you really can't work here. And the person seems flabbergasted. And again, all I'm doing is telling my direct the impact of the company policy on them. I'm using my role power. Okay, fine. Here's what most people don't understand. If I start doing one-on-ones next week and one of my directs says, I don't want to come, I'd say, yeah, it's really not negotiable. And he says, yeah, but I don't want to. Here's what most managers don't get. When I tell my team I'm starting doing one-on-ones, the role power that I have to speak for the company means I speak for the company always, not just when the company asks me to because I'm promulgating a corporate policy, but always. Everything I do is the company to my directs. When I say we're going to do one-on-ones, it as if the CEO said we're going to do one-on-ones and Horseman is going to implement them with you. And by the way, this has all gotten destroyed in terms of people's knowledge because, oh, you know, we want to be more friendly with our directs and so on. We don't have any interest in implying that we want you to be a role power driven manager. We don't want that. We want you to be a relationship driven manager because trust speeds things up and more trust delivers more results in the long run. And the only way to get that, we believe, to be efficient is one-on-ones. But that doesn't mean you don't have any role power at all. The point being, when you're a manager, you represent the company. You are the company. You know, there's a rule that when an ambassador from a foreign country is in your country, she is the country. If you're the commander of the Nimitz and you leave and go to the Zumwalt, a new carrier, a new destroyer class, I think, and Nimitz comes aboard, they say Nimitz arriving. If you're the commander, you represent the ship. You are the ship. People don't get that. So most managers grossly underestimate their role power while overplaying it by relying too much on it versus their relationship power. So when you joke to your directs, it's as if the company is joking to them. Okay? What that means then is you can't make jokes at the expense of the organization because you're a subordinate to the organization and you represent the organization to your directs. And professional subordination says, when the company says we don't do that, you can't do that. In the same way that the company is trying to decide between plan X and plan Y, and the company chooses plan X, and by the way, the company is represented to you by your boss, and your boss says plan X, you don't get to go back to your directs and say, I voted for plan Y, but the boss says, she says, we're going to do plan X. That's professional insubordination. Now, people don't like these type of phrases anymore, professional insubordination and so on, but they're necessary complements to the vertical structure that exists in all truly great organizations in the history of mankind. If you tell jokes at the expense of your organization, you're going to have to tolerate your directs making jokes at the expense of the organization, which is you. Okay. And what's funny about this is I'm going through this whole thing and we're talking about telling jokes about the company. I'm not suggesting that the joke about the company is going to make the company look good. In fact, I defy people to find an organizational internal joke which makes the company look good. One of the favorite jokes of all is, people are our most important asset, delivered with visually Joey air quotes, right? The two right. Index and middle finger of both your right and left hand up in the air, making quotation marks in the air. Nobody makes positive jokes about their organization. You don't get to do that. And folks, it doesn't make you cool or countercultural to do that. It makes you a fool. It makes the organization look bad. It erodes standards. It means your directs can make jokes about you. Let's say you're a director. Now your managers can make jokes about you to their directs. Now when you're trying to get something passed, your skips think of you as a bit of a buffoon and they won't follow you. Why? Because in part, you aided and abetted that by thinking it's okay to make jokes about the organization. People forget that in all humor, there is truth. And when you throw your company under the bus, you're saying it's okay for your directs to throw you under the bus. It's pernicious. It's too bad. It's not cool. What we're saying here is not cool. It'd be easier if everybody could just tell all the jokes that they thought were funny and everybody would wink, wink, nod, nod. But then one of the big social norms of the last 50 years of the world is there's no more wink, wink, nod, nod. You don't get to say to people, oh, it's okay, I can make a joke about that person because they don't look like us. You don't get to do that. Not if you're going to represent your organization.
Thanks, everyone. That's it for this week. We'll finish this one up next week. In the meantime, have a great one. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want the how-tos of management wherever you are, check out the free Manager Tools mobile app. It's available on both iOS and Android devices. Go to the Apple Store or the Google Play Store and download the Manager Tools app. Just search for Manager Tools in the respective store, or go to the Manager Tools website, www.manager-tools.com, and you'll find the links on the bottom of the homepage. Once you've installed the Manager Tools app, you'll have access to all the Manager Tools and Career Tools shows anytime, anywhere you want. With easy searching of podcasts by category, using the map of the universe, or using built-in search functions, it couldn't be easier. Additionally, if you're Manager Tools personal licensee, you'll have easy access to all the show notes right from the app whenever you want. Go to the App Store and download the Manager Tools mobile app. You'll be happy you did.